15 minutes with 5 minutes for rebuttals. Cornelia, you will have 15 minutes. You ready?
I am.
Are you kind of hobbling around?
Everybody says that. I had knee replacement about, I don't know, 8 years ago, but I think it's just the way I'm walking now. I don't know.
Oh, you're not in pain?
No, gosh, no. And the best thing that ever happened is joint replacement. So I can walk a million miles. I can't ski anymore, but I can walk a million miles. That's for sure.
And maybe you can't drive then.
Pardon me?
Then you're not probably going to drive and do donuts in Uptown.
I couldn't do a donut even if I wanted to, except in the wintertime I could probably do that. May it please this court. Counsel, good morning. My name is Craig Cascarano. I represent the appellant, Justin Shelton, in this matter. I intend to be brief because this issue is kind of crystallized, is the best way I can put it. The bottom line is whether skid marks on an intersection in fact damage the concrete. I would respectfully suggest that we've all been around the block. I see familiar faces on the bench. It's good to see everybody. Never had an issue like this before.
So what cases do we look to? Do we look to graffiti cases? Do we look to egging of house cases? Do you have any suggestions on where we could look for?
I tried to find some cases that dealt with damage to property that would kind of rise to the level of these facts. I didn't find any, which is why I just simply cited the Powers case, which is just a general definitional case as to what damage to property is. I tried to focus my brief on that definition, which is reduction in value. And I think that's the key here, not whether or not there was an estimate for $13,000 or whether there was an ultimate estimate for $1,700. The question is whether or not the concrete intersection was damaged in value. And
we can say the Powers case worked against you for that very reason, because they seem to make it clear that an estimate for repair, which we have here and you concede, is the felony level. Wouldn't that end it at that point, at least for purposes of probable cause, as opposed to the heightened standard for proof beyond a reasonable doubt?
No, I don't think it ends it at all. Just because there's an estimate doesn't mean that the intersection is damaged. And I think in anticipation of that question, I think you can look at the record, which is the intersection was never repaired. Nothing ever happened. And we submitted photos to the court that were taken sometime after the incident where the intersection is completely clean again. And why is that? It's because by virtue of being in Minnesota, and the snow and the salt and all that kind of stuff, that literally fixed the intersection all by itself. So by way of analogy, which is what I've tried to do.
So we should just wait for the potholes to just fill themselves.
Well, there's the big distinction between potholes and skid marks. And there's no evidence here.
As there is between probable cause and beyond a reasonable doubt.
No question about that. Let me back up and mention one thing. What's curious about this is law enforcement issues this probable cause. There's no oversight. I mean, some sergeant gets up in the morning and says, we need to stop this blowing donuts at 2 o'clock in the morning in downtown Minneapolis. That is really what this is all about, right? And it was a terrible, terrible problem in Minneapolis during that summer. There's no question about that. And they needed to stop it somehow. And so they videotape these intersections. They find that Mr. Shelton and this other individual are involved. And they want to stop it. So how do they do that? Well, they come up with what I believe some contorted reason that by blowing a donut in the middle of an intersection and leaving skid marks, that that's somehow damage to property. It's curious because when I was driving over here this morning, I was thinking to myself, how can I posture this best to the courts? And as I was driving down 94, I see these long skid marks in the middle of 94. Obviously, there must have been some sort of car accident. That didn't damage 94. Everybody's still driving down 94. And I take I dispute what Judge Garcia said in the order, which was that it says that the law enforcement officer, Cordes, I think was her name, indicated that the intersection was damaged. But I asked her, and I refer the court to page 24 and 25 in the transcript, where I said the intersection could still be used by bicyclists, correct? Correct. The intersection could still be used by cars, correct? Correct. This intersection could still be used by pedestrians. So it didn't cause any damage with regard to that. Then, for all intents and purposes, there's no reduction in value then. It's not as if there's a... No, I respectfully suggest that you are damaged by the graffiti, but it's vastly different than skid marks on an intersection. The appearance of your house is important, right? How you feel about it is important.
So location, so instead of an intersection in downtown Minneapolis in the summer of 2020 when this is happening and rampant, and so apparently people are kind of used to it at that point, if the same incident happens in a church parking lot where they're making all this mess and a church wishes to repaint it, are they damaged?
No.
They are not.
They are not. Because we're talking, Judge, we're talking about concrete. We're talking about asphalt as opposed to your house, that when somebody graffitis the exterior of your house, that you indeed are damaged because the appearance is damaged. There's no reduction, and for all intents and purposes, if somebody graffitis your house, back to my main argument, is reduction in value. Do we conclude that your house is reduced in value because there's graffiti on the exterior? I think we can all conclude that, right? But there's no reduction in value to the intersection when somebody has a skid mark. There's no reduction in value to Highway 94 driving over here when there's a skid mark going down the middle of 94. Never created any potholes. Never destroyed any of the asphalt. Never one bit affected the actual use of the intersection. Indeed, this was an excuse to arrest and try to stop what was going on in the summer with regard to these.
So
now, I understand that maybe that's out of the record, but I think...
That's what I was going to ask you. And the state brought that up in their brief. I think that's what we all speculate.
Exactly.
But it's not in the record.
It is not. Then it's speculation on my part. But... again, the other thing that concerns me is that some law enforcement officer, without any kind of oversight, issues this PC hold. It goes out, and then they arrest him. And then by that time, it's too late because he's arrested for the gun that he has. I think it's important to note that the intersection was never repaired.
There's a footnote in the state's brief. I'm looking at footnote 8. They say that the two of you stipulate in district court that, quote, First Avenue and 4th Street intersection was repainted and relined on October 5 and 6 of 2020. And as I understand the chronology, the donuts were made August 9th, PC pickup August 19th. Then we have this repainting, and then August 17th. Your client was arrested on the PC pickup.
Here's the way I understand the chronology. PC was issued, whether it was an estimate, PC issued, arrested. Intersection is the same. Nobody does anything for $19,000, which is outrageous. Then there's another estimate that the city had, which was like $1,100 or $1,000, and that was for general maintenance of all the intersections downtown, not specific to this intersection. And there wasn't any concrete empirical evidence to show that this intersection was actually repainted or repaired, not repaired, but repainted in the normal course. Again, we submitted evidence by virtue of photographs that's very clear that the intersection had not been repainted, but the skid marks were gone. Again, that's just a function of being in Minnesota. So the graffiti on your house isn't going to go away with the snow and salt on the road. And I would suggest that your house is reduced in value, but I strongly suggest, as you can tell, perhaps I'm a little more animated than I need to be, is that there's no reduction in value here. Now, whether or not the city intends to repaint it is their billet, but to say that skid marks in an intersection that doesn't do anything to reduce its actual activity, then there's no...
What about the argument, I'm looking at Judge Garcia's opinion, she says significant tire marks are in the intersection covering the lines in the intersection and the crosswalks. Did your pictures show anything covering the lines of the intersection and the crosswalk?
No. No. The pictures...
Would you concede that if the skid marks did do those things, that the city would want to repaint them because, people need to know where you got to cross the street and, cross the green, not in between?
Exactly. And that's why we introduced the pictures, is if you... And they're part of the record. You can take a look at them. It will be very clear that these pictures, that the intersection was not repainted, but all of a sudden the skid marks are gone. And again, it's a function of the winter more than anything else. I think that's important, is because, for example, the graffiti in the house isn't going to go away by itself. I think I've already said that. So it's like getting hit. If you're driving your car and you get in a car accident and the front bumper is bent, that we can conclude that's reduction in value, right? But we could also conclude that if you don't do anything, it's not going to fix by itself. You got to do something. This is a completely different situation. And although I've alluded it, I've alluded to it in my brief, I think the court can conclude that there really wasn't any criminal damage to property because Mr. Shelton was never charged with criminal damage to property. It really doesn't make any difference. I made reference to the fact that they sat on the case for 2 months before he was charged. That's not relevant. That wasn't the point of my brief. The point is, they could have charged him with a felony criminal damage to property if they felt it was appropriate. And we all know the county attorney's office. We know what they can charge. They can charge the gun case without any question, and they can charge another felony. But they didn't, because it's baloney. You can't damage an intersection by spinning your tires. And again, I've made reference also to the Minneapolis ordinance that talks about unlawful acceleration, which basically you're at a stop sign and you burn out your tires because you think it's cool, but it's not so cool, and then you get a ticket for unlawful acceleration. That's the purpose of the statute. They don't charge you with, obviously you've made skid marks, but they don't charge you with criminal damage to property, even as a misdemeanor. They don't do that because there's no criminal damage to property. Just like there's no criminal damage to property. If I'm driving down 94, somebody in front of me stops, I have to jam on my brakes, my car skids around. Fortunately, I don't hit anybody, but there's clearly skid marks on 94. Did I damage 94 where I now have to be charged with either misdemeanor or felony criminal damage to property? No, because 94 is still in use, just like the intersection was still in use. And I suggest that the skid marks that I saw this morning driving over here, next spring will be gone. That's just the way it works. Beyond that, I have nothing further. Thank you.
Before you sit down, Judge Sleater can't see the clock, so I'm just going to ask him if he has any questions before you sit down. Judge Sleater?
No additional questions. Thank you, Judge Riley.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Cascarano.
Thank you.
Respondent.
Good morning, and may it please the court, counsel. My name is Nicole Cornell. I'm an assistant Hennepin County attorney, appearing on behalf of the state of Minnesota, the respondent in this matter. In this case, the officer's arrest of appellant at a Minneapolis gas station for felony-level criminal damage to property was supported by probable cause. So therefore, this court should affirm the district court's denial of appellant's motion to suppress the gun evidence found on his person in his fanny pack at the gas station.
So how do you respond to Mr. Cascarano's argument that this was just cosmetic, transient kind of marking of the intersection that wore away with snow and ice and weather?
I have three responses, and I hope I can recall them all on the fly at this moment. The first one is I want to clarify the chronology that Your Honor Judge Riley had asked about at the beginning of argument this morning. The appropriate chronology is this. You have donuts in the intersection in early August, PC pickup order based on all the surveillance video and the entire intersection being covered in skid marks. Then you have August 17. The pickup order is executed. They find him. Then...
You mean October 17.
Was it October instead of August?
I think so. I mean,
The PC pickup happened August
19.
And the actual... arrest of appellant occurred at some point later. And I want to clarify about the pictures that were presented at the contested motion hearing that were entered by appellant. Those pictures, according to the testimony from the contested motion hearing, were taken either in December or February following all these events. So to say that the pictures show the intersection was never repainted is just not true. If the stipulation is that they were repainted in October, then pictures subsequent to that wouldn't show that the skid marks were covering the intersection.
Except that they would show that the skid marks had worn off where they hadn't been repainted at that time.
And I don't recall seeing that in the photos. So I would have to recheck the photos if there were evidence of any skid marks. And I don't know what the treatment is. If it's just paint and nothing else, if there's some sort of pressure, I have no idea.
And that's not in the record.
And that is not in the record. So my first point is that the chronology is off, and I don't think the pictures show what appellant has said. And also the pictures don't show that the paint repair was never done. In fact, contrary to what appellant is continuing to assert, they were repainted. The intersection was repainted. So that is my first answer to that question. My second answer...
Mr. Cascarano mentioned in his argument that, you know, the repair estimates or the painting estimates were for sort of the city in general. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there any breakdown as to this intersection in the estimates?
I don't believe there is.
And isn't that a problem then?
It's not a problem when you're talking about probable cause for criminal damage to property to execute this pickup order. We are not in beyond a reasonable doubt land. And the stipulated exhibits show that the estimates were for $8,000 for a plethora of intersections, $9,000 for a plethora of intersections, and then ultimately what was paid was over $1,000 for 4th and 1st and then some other intersection. But the point is, what did Investigator Cortes know when she reviewed the evidence from the August events in the intersection and then when she issued that pickup order on the 19th of August? So that is what this court should be concerned about. It's a brief period of time. What did Investigator Cortes know when she issued that PC pickup order? Did she have probable cause on every element of first-degree, felony-level criminal damage to property? And she did. She had estimates for over $8,000, over $9,000, and that is sufficient under Powers to prove beyond a reasonable doubt the extent of damage. Yes?
Based on your answer you just gave to Judge Conley, did she know it was felony level? If it's a plethora of intersections and there's no delineation at that time that she issued the pickup order, that it was over 1,000 at that intersection. Would she need that information in order for even a probable cause level objectively to have that information?
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor. I don't think an estimate needs to delineate in any particular way in this context. And that is because...
But isn't the idea of the estimate, and that's what Powers refers to, is Is that important for a probable cause determination?
It's not unimportant, but the standard here is there a fair probability that this appellant caused more than $1,000 worth of damages at this intersection? And based on those estimates of nearly $10,000, no matter if you divide it by the number of intersections in a particular invoice, and there were multiple invoices with all sorts of different intersections being discussed and estimating the cost for its entirety. I don't know if the city of Minneapolis gets itemized invoices in that way.
I'm going to go that with they don't.
They don't. And again, that's not part of the record. But what you see,
it does seem to make common sense.
Possibly. So when you're looking at the amount, the total amount in those invoices estimated at nearly $10,000, what that leads a reasonable investigator like Investigator Cortes to conclude is that over $1,000 will cover the paint for the intersection, which was completely covered in skid marks at that time. What this court can see from the exhibits of the surveillance footage is you can't see the bike lane. You can't see any of the crosswalks. You can't see any of the intersection lines. It's completely covered. That is dangerous to public safety. Drivers need to know where to drive and where not to drive. Pedestrians need to know where to walk, where not to walk. The bike lane was ruined. And so it's it is a reasonable and probable inference that over $1,000 worth of damages was done to the surface. And that sort of is the second answer I intended to include in Judge Riley's question. But the third response is, I understand that appellant does not believe that surface damage to an intersection is important enough, or it's sort of, I'm reading between the lines as appellant is saying this crime is a pretext to stop this individual as punishment for disrupting life in August. That's not only not in the record, that is outside the scope of this court's probable cause review. So what I hear is that appellant is disputing several facts that were presented at the contested hearing and that were found by the district court, and that obviously Investigator Cortes was considering in her probable cause analysis. But the standard for reviewing the facts in a probable cause determination is clearly erroneous. There is no clear error here.
So let me try this. Let's suppose this hypothetical. Mr. Cascarano's client is charged with destroying the big plate glass window at Joe's coffee shop on Lake Street. He's charged with criminal damage to property over $1,000. And there's a probable cause hearing, and the city presents an estimate that says it's going to cost $1 million to replace all the plate glass windows that were destroyed on Lake Street during the riots. And let's assume that this plate glass window was destroyed, at Joe's coffee shop was destroyed during the riots. And that's all the estimate says. It's going to cost $1 million to replace all the plate glass windows on Lake Street for store owners during the riots. Does that estimate provide enough to survive a motion to dismiss for lack of probable cause?
My first answer is yes, but my hesitation with that hypothetical is that if you have Joe's coffee shop, that's the victim here. So
yes,
they would get their own estimate. It wouldn't be the city of Minneapolis doing some overarching repair of every non-public owned building in a particular location. So that hypothetical is a little difficult for me. But when you're looking at probable cause, is there a fair probability? And so what is the investigator looking at? What does that invoice exactly say there? Is it so far in excess of $1,000 that there is a fair probability that the particular window at issue the damage of that particular window does exceed $1,000? And if that is reasonable, then yes, that satisfies the low standard of probable cause in this case. We're talking about, is there an honest and strong suspicion that there is damage in excess of $1,000? And yes, that is the case here. You've got $8,000 in an estimate, over $9,000, I think it's $9,300,000 in an estimate. So when you're looking at those invoices and when you're looking at the very clear surveillance video evidence here of donuts covering the entire intersection, it's reasonable for Investigator Cortes to conclude that probable cause exists to arrest this appellant. And I don't know what all the other intersections looked like in August of 2020 that were included on some of those invoices, but we're talking probable cause. You're deferring to the officer's determination of what happened at the time in a reasonable investigator Cortez's shoes at that time. And for those reasons, this court can absolutely conclude that a substantial basis has been established. So I just want to reiterate one other point. The factual discrepancies here that appellant is bringing to light fall under a clear error standard. So is there a clear error in the facts here? And there is not. So I just want to frame that analysis there. And I do want to make one final point about State versus Powers. And the most important part is that after the Minnesota Supreme Court interpreted the phrase, quote, value of the property measured by the cost of repair and replacement, unquote, it determined that the state proved beyond a reasonable doubt the value of the damaged property by way of estimates for a damaged piece of property that was never actually repaired. So if that's the standard here, so if estimates of repair costs and repainting costs are enough to prove the fourth element beyond a reasonable doubt, then they are necessarily enough in this case to establish probable cause. And unless the court has other questions, I can conclude. But in this case, the record shows that Investigator Cortez did have a substantial basis for believing that appellant committed the offense of first-degree felony-level criminal damage to property, justifying the pickup order, and so this court should affirm.
Judge Slater, do you have any questions before she sits down?
No additional questions. Thank you, Judge
Riley.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Mr. Cascarano, any rebuttal?
I am going to take strong objection to the county attorney's representation to this court that this intersection was, quote, completely covered. It was not. And you can see that on the record. If the county attorney is claiming that this entire intersection, that was 4th and 2nd Avenue, or wherever it was, from all four stoplights, was completely covered in skid marks, that is a misrepresentation to this court. Period. Strong stop.
In the findings of fact.
Exactly. And we can conclude that that wasn't the case because I specifically asked the law enforcement officer three very specific questions. Did the skid marks prevent the bicyclists from using the intersection? The answer was no. Did the skid marks prevent the cars from starting, stopping during the intersection? No. And did the skid marks prevent pedestrians from using the intersection? Answer no. That is, by the way, different.
Did you ask, do the skid marks cover the crosswalks lines? I'm going to bet you didn't ask that question.
I didn't. You know why I didn't? Because the pictures clearly show that they didn't. So I didn't have to answer the question. I understand that the skid marks caused that they're black marks on the intersection. That's what we're talking about here. But they didn't cover the entire intersection. That's just totally absurd. That would mean that car would have to go this way, this way, this way. I mean, you have to take a magic marker or something and do the entire intersection. That's impossible.
How, Mr. Cascarano, how detailed do you think, in this case, in order for it to survive probable cause, what did the estimate have to say?
In order to survive the probable cause?
In order for probable cause to be established.
I suggest that let me back up. The fact that there's an estimate, in my mind, doesn't answer the question as to whether or not it's, quote, reduced in value. That's my big issue.
Well, let's say for the sake of argument, in my mind, it does. So how detailed does the estimate have to be? What should the estimate say? Did it need to say to repaint the skid marks, it was over $1,000? I assume that would have been enough.
It would have been enough, presumably. Okay. But there's no delineation, and like I say, the pictures.
What if it had said to repair the skid marks, it's going to cost between $500 and $5,000?
Now, that's a problem because, of course, there's a distinction between a misdemeanor and felony. And that draws me to kind of another issue is that we don't have any oversight when a law enforcement officer issues a probable cause. So it's like, okay, well, I kind of think this might be probable cause, and I'm just going to issue it. And then the guy gets arrested, and he's in jail for 36 hours, and perhaps he doesn't have a gun, and he's in 36 hours, and then they release him, and he never gets charged for criminal damage to property. Who's going to pay him back for the 36 hours he spent in jail because some cop at 2 o'clock in the morning decides to issue a PC hold that has no basis? Maybe way out of the record, maybe it's not important, but there is no oversight for us to now say, here, just because the entire intersections in downtown Minneapolis cost $10,000, it doesn't mean that the reduction in value in this particular intersection is over $1,000, could be $250. And I am strong in my belief that if the court looks at these pictures that we took, that the defendant took in this February or December, you will see that this intersection had not been repainted. The green marks are all kind of messed up that they are in the wintertime, and there is not one skid mark in this entire intersection, which obviously goes...
Sheriff Bruno?
Yes.
Can I just clarify our standard of review that Ms. Parnell just made reference to deferential standard for review of the comments? Do I understand that you disagree with that, that because the facts are not in dispute,
No, I'm not disputing that. What I'm suggesting is that part of this record will show that the skid marks simply went away by themselves. They were never repaired, and you can that's part of the record. That's what I'm suggesting, Judge. Beyond that, I have nothing further, and it's good to see everybody again.
Thank you. Good to see you both, too. We will have our opinion out within the 90 days.